Richard Silla joins us by phone tonight. He's an Alexander Hamilton Scholar, Chairman of the Museum of American Finance and Professor Emeritus of Economics at New York University Stern School of Business. Recipient of many awards, he served as President of the Economic History Association and last year was a National Phi Beta Kappa Visiting Scholar. Tonight we'll talk about his illustrated biography of Alexander Hamilton, titled Hamilton. Richard Silla, I'm Barbara Graham, so happy to welcome you to Around Cincinnati to talk about this amazing book you've written.
I'm great to be with you, Barbara.
So I found it fascinating that you write that Alexander Hamilton was a rarity, both a thinker and a man of action. And he comes out of this very challenging childhood. Essentially, he's orphaned at 12 in his birthplace, the island of Nevis in the West Indies. Not too long afterward, through a job as a clerk, he makes his way to America and then goes on to play a crucial part in the political, legal, and economic development of America. So if you would take us through each of those areas where his influence was so strong, but let's begin with his contribution to economic development, because from your dedication, I assume this is his most important contribution.
I would say so, because I think he, of the founding fathers, Hamilton was the one who knew the most about finance. He was way ahead of everyone else. He had a modern understanding of finance, which he could derive by reading history. You know, the Dutch were the most important economy of the 17th century, mainly because they modernized their finances. Britain was the biggest economy of the 18th century because they modernized their finances at its beginning. And Hamilton said, you know, history shows us that finance is very important in building a strong economy and a strong country. And so when he was Treasury Secretary, he introduced, you know, most of what I call the elements of a modern financial system: a national debt market, the U.S. dollar, the first central bank, the Bank of the United States. And his actions prompted brokers to start stock markets, state governments to charter more and more banks, and state governments to charter more and more corporations. These were all great modernizing trends. They wouldn't have happened, I think, without Hamilton.
In addition, then, there are his contributions to the political and legal systems.
Well, yeah, if you trace his whole career, when he comes into the country, he writes essays saying America should be an independent country. This was before the War of Independence. The War of Independence broke out. Hamilton drops his pen and picks up his sword. He becomes an artillery captain in New York's militia, and then he joins Washington's staff as the principal aide-de-camp. He leads a bayonet charge at Yorktown. I mean, it's sort of fascinating that a person can write a long essays, you know, justifying American independence and then jump into his soldier's uniform and fight. He did something similar with the Constitution. He thought that America ought to have a better form of government. He writes about that in 1781, and then he calls for a constitutional convention. 6 years later, we have a constitutional convention. Hamilton is at that convention helping to write the Constitution. Once it's written, he defends it in what are called the Federalist Papers and recruited James Madison and John Jay to help him. Then he becomes Treasury Secretary. Later on, he's an important lawyer pushing for what we call judicial review. The Supreme Court, you know, tells Congress which laws they can pass and not. And then he was an important military figure. You know, he drew up the plans for West Point, and just he excelled in a number of different areas. But I do think that other people could have done what he did in most areas, but nobody could have done what he did in finance.
Talk a little bit about his abolition views, you know, where he came from, what the composition of that society was. And
this is where his being an immigrant is important, because he grew up in the West Indies where, you know, 8 or 9 out of every 10 people were black. And Hamilton's mother actually owned a few slaves, and Hamilton grew up in the West Indies in a household where, you know, there were black kids, and he got to know them very well, and he developed a view, which was very unusual for that time, that blacks were the equal of whites intellectually, but they had gotten the, you know, short end of the stick in life by being slaves. And he detested slavery, and what I do in this chapter on Hamilton as an abolitionist show that on any number of occasions, you know, 5 or 6 different occasions, Hamilton takes a strong abolitionist view, you know, that slavery's a bad thing, and he wanted to get rid of it. Why didn't he get rid of it? Well, it's because he knew that the country would not hold together. If we tried to banish slavery in Hamilton's time, the country would have split up into two countries. The Southerners were not about to give up their slave system. So Hamilton had to sort of push abolitionist tendencies he had to the back burner and for the greater goal of national unity.
You write that he was the least loved of the founding fathers, and talk about that a bit, if you would. Does that have to do with what we might see as a weakness in him?
Well, I don't think it's so much a weakness. It's a kind of shows that he was a forceful individual, and the forceful individual, strong leaders sometimes rub people the wrong way if they disagree with your views. But in terms of modern society, you know, in Hamilton, until the musical, Hamilton was kind of in the background. And I point out in the book that that's because politically, nobody likes him. The left doesn't like him because he was pro-business and pro-finance, you know, like Bernie Sanders would not like him for that reason. But you might think the right would then like him. But in fact, the right views Hamilton as a person who built up the power of the federal government. You know, he was a big government guy, and we know the federal government is too big and interferes too much in our life. So the right wing doesn't like him either. So there's poor Hamilton. Nobody in terms of modern politics likes him, but the musical is making a lot of people like him now.
You also write, I believe, that he lived in times that were in ways similar to ours. So what can we learn from him about America today?
Well, I think you learn from Hamilton that it's important for us to be a unified country. Our recent political campaign seems to divide us up between, you know, people on the West Coast and the East Coast seem to be different from the people in the middle of the country. Hamilton would say that's sort of natural, but you should remember that the most important thing is for the country to hang together. I think he would say that we should keep our economy strong. We should keep our defenses strong. He was certainly a military man who believed that we had to have a standing army. That was against a lot of views in his time. They thought militias were enough. Hamilton thought militias. He shared this view with Washington. In fact, that's an important point to remember, that Hamilton and Washington were birds of a feather. They shared a lot of the same views. And that, I think, helps us to appreciate Hamilton, because everybody likes Washington.
There is, of course, the infamous duel with Aaron Burr. And you suggest that the outcome was an unintended one. Would you speak about that?
Yeah, in thinking about the duel, it's fairly well documented. There are a lot of letters, so we know a lot about what actually happened leading to that duel. And thinking about it, you know, Burr and Hamilton were both important politicians, national leaders, and neither one of them had an interest in killing the other. Hamilton, of course, was killed. Burr, I think, you know, Burr killed Hamilton, and that ruined Burr's career. Before Burr leveled his gun in Hamilton's direction, I think he must have thought that I have nothing to gain by killing Hamilton. And so I'm suggesting that Burr maybe really meant to scare him by, you know, shooting next to him or shooting him in the leg or something like that. But accidentally, his guns weren't very good. They weren't very accurate at that time. These dueling pistols were not accurate. So I think Burr, who had nothing to gain by killing Hamilton, probably did not intend to kill him. But that happened, and the result was Burr's career was ruined. I think it was so the most famous duel in American history may well have had an accidental outcome.
The core of this book is your writing, of course. You really bring history alive for us. But you've included illustrations. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I think that, you know, I've read the longer biographies, the Ron Chernow biography, which is like 800 pages, not many pictures in there. I just thought that now with so many young people, because of the musical, interested in Hamilton, if we did an illustrated biography of Hamilton, it would, you know, young people don't like to read long things now, but they do like pictures. And so the idea for this book is to bring Hamilton to life by showing, you know, the people he dealt with and the battles he fought and other illustrations. And so I'm hoping that this gets a lot of students interested in Hamilton, because they do have an interest in history because of the musical. Now the book will tell them, you know, a little bit about what actually happened.
Well, you have created an extraordinary and enlightening book about an extraordinary Alexander Hamilton. I thank you so much for visiting with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
I've been talking with Richard Cilla about his book titled Hamilton, an illustrated biography of Alexander Hamilton, about which you can find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
I may not live to see our glory.
I may not live to see our glory.
But I will gladly join the fight.
But I will gladly join the fight.
And when our children tell our story.
And when our children tell our story.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
Let's have another round tonight.
Let's have another round tonight.
Let's have another round tonight.
Raise a glass to freedom. Something they can never take away. No matter what they tell you. Raise a glass to the four of us. Tomorrow there'll be more of us.
Telling the story of tonight.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
Raise a glass to freedom. Something they can never take away.
No matter what they tell you.
Let's have another round tonight.
Raise a glass to the four of us. Tomorrow there'll be more of us.
Telling the story of tonight.
Let's have another round tonight.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
Raise a glass to freedom.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
Raise a glass to freedom.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
They'll tell the story.